Welcome to Lightning in a Bottle, the essential podcast for middle market business owners, key stakeholders, and the advisors who guide them. I'm Josh Pottinger, and joined by my co-host, Jason Chirogiannis. Together, we lead ATX Wealth Partners, a private wealth management team at UBS here in Austin, Texas. Now, over the course of almost 30 years, we've built a vibrant community and have curated a suite of resources tailored for your success, from insightful white papers and cutting-edge research to exclusive in-person events and expert-led podcasts. We are here to provide the tools that you need. Now, if you're considering an exit, this is likely the most significant financial decision of your life, and typically, you only have one chance to get it right. So our mission is clear: to arm you with the knowledge to enhance the value of your business, navigate a successful sale, and of course, optimize your post-exit financial outcomes. Now with that, let's dive in and unlock the strategies that will prepare you for a prosperous future. Hello everyone, Josh Pottinger here, and we are thrilled to be recording episode number 27. We have an interesting topic today, and it's all about cybersecurity and secure tech. And I recently, over the past couple of years, have gotten to know some of the folks at Night Dragon, which is a private equity firm out there that focuses on the cybersecurity and secure tech space. We listened to their recent call last week, and I think the timeliness of having this conversation is so important, especially for all of you founders out there that are running businesses. You know, a lot of the folks that we talk to are kind of middle market, lower middle market businesses. And, you know, when we look back into 2024, the threat landscape has escalated, and recent events like the Verizon IT outage and CrowdStrike's disruption of 30,000 customers, I think more than that maybe, but 674,000 supply chain companies highlighted some of those challenges. Microsoft Azure, AWS outages, CrowdStrike debacle, the ransomware events with Ascension costing them tons of money. And it's not just hitting the big businesses, it's hitting the small and medium-sized businesses. Last night when we had our roundtable discussion, we heard a story about a movie theater operation down in San Antonio being held ransom and costing them a ton of money. Even one of our guests at the roundtable, his controller was tricked into wiring out a significant amount of money to a bad actor. And so all of these events really demonstrate the complexities of today's tech environment. And then you kind of add on to this, the shift to cloud architecture, which has brought new risks in these ransomware attacks. And so, you know, we have a lot to unpack today, and I'm sorry for the longer introduction, but I thought that this episode really deserved it. And so today I'm excited to have Morgan Kayak, and he is with Night Dragon. He brings a wealth of experience leading M&A transactions for companies of all size, from late stage pre-IPO companies to large serial acquirers. And most recently, Morgan was VP of Corporate Development at FireEye, where he was responsible for the evaluation, execution, and integration of all the acquisition, investment, and strategic partnering activity for the company. He's also held corporate development leadership roles at Dropbox, Juniper Networks, and HP. And he began his career back doing M&A activity when he was over at B of A Merrill Lynch. So Morgan is a smart guy, got his MBA at Wharton. I did a little thing there that was fun. Not like you did, but I spent a week there. It was interesting. And then you got your business administration and economics from the University of California, Berkeley.
That's right.
So I am going to stop talking here, guys. Morgan, thank you for joining me.
Oh, I'm excited to be here, Josh. Thanks for having me.
So Morgan is in town from the Bay Area. He had a few meetings yesterday with some cool companies. We had our roundtable discussion last night. This is one of my favorite things. We had a small little roundtable last night over at the Four Seasons. I had some great guests, had some good conversation. So thanks, Morgan, for being a good sport and participating in that.
No, it was great. I mean, when we look at cybersecurity and security tech as a sector, it's always great to understand how these bigger problems are impacting smaller businesses, right? Because as you alluded to, security technology, cybersecurity, it's not just a big company problem, it's a SMB problem. So hearing those stories and understanding their concerns is just great insights for me to have as an investor and understand where the market is going.
Yeah. And one of our guests just came back from Ukraine and was talking about all the hacking going on with the Russians and the Ukrainians, and just the craziness going over there and experiencing that firsthand and also meeting with some important people over there. Let's get this kicked off here, Morgan. You know, at Night Dragon, you see and track a lot of the top threats out there. So let's just kick it off with what are some of the biggest risks or risk categories that you're watching right now?
Yeah, so I've been in the cybersecurity industry for about 2 decades now. And the unfortunate part is the amount of risk we see out in the market is as large as ever, in that it's coming in many different forms. You mentioned a few of the major breaches we've seen recently, maybe MGM, Clorox, Snowflake, United Healthcare as another one. And these are organizations that spend tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars into security technologies, into cybersecurity personnel. And there's still breaches that are occurring that's coming from a teenager based in the UK that's costing these organizations hundreds of millions of dollars. And so that speaks to the inability to see everything and stop everything. And so from a risk perspective, one of the things we've seen, especially with COVID, especially with the acceleration of digital transformation, is the rise of identity-based risks, meaning organizations are being targeted where they have compromised credentials, they're using social engineering, they're using spear phishing to attack these organizations that may not necessarily have the employees that are trained up to identify these types of risks, may not have the security technologies to detect these types of risks. And so these identity-based attacks is one of the trends we've seen over the past few years accelerate. And these are the ways that large organizations, like I described, are getting breached. And that's one trend we're seeing where 10 years ago, you had this concept of a perimeter where you had your data center, you had firewalls that protected that data center. Everything's now moved to the cloud. You're using SaaS applications, you're using mobile devices, and employees are working remotely. And so they become easy targets for now, what's called identity-based attacks. And so that's a huge risk we're seeing, but also a big opportunity. Companies, innovative companies that are developing technologies to find these types of risks, address and remediate them, have a big opportunity ahead of them. And so that's maybe one category of growing risk we see. The other one, I think over time, what we'll see is the use of Gen AI. I think everyone is probably aware that's listening to this podcast, the impact of Gen AI on technology. Mm-hmm. Within cybersecurity itself, we're certainly seeing impact and innovation using Gen AI to defend against today's threats. Mm-hmm. But we're also seeing Gen AI being leveraged by the adversary, by the attacker.
Right.
And so there are some basic ways we're seeing that materialize today. The first one is attackers that are commonly based out of Eastern Europe or North Korea or other locations outside of the US, using ChatGPT, using these LLMs to create spear phishing emails, right? So historically, you might have gotten an email with broken English. Now all of that will look like somebody is emailing you from the US with a request to change an account number or wire to a certain account. It's becoming much harder to detect because of the use of Gen AI by these attackers. The other aspect that we're seeing is that, you know, one of the most powerful aspects of ChatGPT and Gen AI is the ability to write code. And so you have these amazing technologies like GitHub Copilot by Microsoft that's increasing developer productivity by tenfold in some cases. Mm-hmm. But what it's also doing is giving attackers a way to write malware. And so not necessarily ChatGPT, but you have this whole ability to take down open source models that can go and actually write malware for you, right? And so generally what we're seeing is for you to become a more sophisticated hacker, that bar has lowered greatly with the use of Gen AI. And over time, we expect to see Gen AI-driven attacks against organizations. And then the final thing I'd call out, and maybe a little bit more relevant to your listeners here, is that we have seen a growing trend around attacks against small to medium businesses. Uh-huh. And then the reason is because many SMBs don't have the personnel, the expertise, the technologies to defend themselves against today's threats. Oftentimes, they make easy targets. Yep. And so we certainly saw that when COVID caused many businesses to operate digitally, create e-commerce storefronts and adopt credit card payments via the internet, adopt digital payments. And so that opened up the attack surface for these SMBs. And, you know, I think they realize how vulnerable they were as an organization because of the lack of preparedness and investment that they had within cybersecurity. And that led to an explosion of ransomware attacks we've seen in more recent years. And so from an attack perspective, risk perspective, I think SMBs have become a big target because they are, in the attacker's eyes, the low-hanging fruit, the ability to hit an organization with a ransomware attack, hopefully get them to pay. That's much easier to do versus much larger enterprise that may have the sophisticated security technologies, personnel to stop those types of threats.
Right. You guys are, NightDragon just did a big report on SMBs. And so, you know, last night at our dinner, you were talking through some of the innovations that we're seeing in that space, like solutions for the SMB space. So for those of you out there, small, medium business, SMB, because oftentimes these smaller companies don't have the resources to hire a dedicated cybersecurity expert, but there are some things that they can do to help educate their clients through trying to trick them into clicking on links.
Yeah.
And then we talked about some, for lack of a better word, a virtual CFO version for the cybersecurity space. So maybe you can elaborate a little bit on that, because I think that would give some of our audience some tangible things that they can start looking into.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because when we think about at NightDragon where the biggest market opportunities are, we like to think about it from the perspective of the threat, right? So I mentioned identity-based attacks. We're looking at companies innovating there. I talked about Gen AI, and we're looking at companies innovating around detection of Gen AI-based attacks. But SMB cybersecurity has become an amazing market opportunity for investment because of the threat landscape SMBs face. 10 years ago, if you looked at the big public cybersecurity companies out there, all their tooling and their go-to-market motion was largely dedicated towards large enterprise. That's because that's where the dollars were. Larger enterprises wanted to spend money on cybersecurity, could not get breached because of the damage to brand and reputation and trust. And so you largely had this, I mean, we at NightDragon, we called it a barbell market, where either as a cybersecurity company, you're either focused on large enterprise needs or you're focused on the consumer, like a McAfee or Symantec selling consumer antivirus. And you had this gap in the middle where cybersecurity companies did not have a solution available for SMBs to make it easy for them. But that's changed significantly because of the attacks SMBs have recently faced and the rising consciousness of cybersecurity across this customer segment. So one of the things we've seen more recently is the rise of SMB cybersecurity, with the idea of making cybersecurity an easy button for that SMB. So from the perspective of ensuring that even though you may not have the dedicated personnel, expertise, or even the time to go and roll out a sophisticated cybersecurity program, you have the ability to adopt that very quickly, either using an outsourced type of model or deploying technologies that are very easy to use, right? So when we think about SMB cybersecurity, I think about it from the view of there's kind of the table stakes cybersecurity needs that an organization should have. A big component of that is awareness of the cybersecurity threat landscape, awareness of how attacks come in, and how individuals, employees should respond to them. I mean, one thing we've seen is even though there's $200 billion getting spent on cybersecurity today, the humans themselves, the employees, are the weakest link. And so being able to allow individuals to identify spear phishing attacks and know the right process and protocol to use when wiring money to an account, I mean, those are just the basic things that SMBs will need to put in place. Beyond that, there's a set of cybersecurity tools that SMBs will want to deploy that offer the basic level of protection. So one obvious one is antivirus on your endpoint, right? So that makes sure that if you click on a malicious URL, if you download a malicious attachment, it can be found quickly and it could stop any potential attack from impacting your direct endpoint or preventing lateral movement within your network, your organization for a bigger ransomware attack. Now, that is not a foolproof approach. Obviously, with some of the ransomware attacks we've seen, they can bypass these signature-based defenses. And so that's where you're going to want to put in place what's called in the market an MSSP or MDR. And you can think about this as like your outsourced CFO model. This is where you will have an outsourced team of cybersecurity experts.
So an MSSP.
Yes.
And that stands for?
Managed Security Service Provider.
Okay.
MDR, that stands for Managed Detection and Response.
And what's the difference between, you're probably getting into the difference
is? I'm getting into that. The MSSP market has been around for a long time, largely servicing, upper mid-market, large enterprise customers. And they acted as an incremental line of defense where if you have a cybersecurity team that's reviewing security alerts, you want to outsource that because your team is, not going to operate 24/7, then you can hire this MSSP organization to review those alerts for you. That market has evolved into now what's called the MDR market, Managed Detection and Response, where in addition to just reviewing alerts, the managed service that you're getting is much more sophisticated. They're actively hunting within your organizations for threats. They're actively engaging with your employees and educating them about future threats. And so you see this market around MSSP and MDR, which is effectively an outsourced security team, come together. And so I tend to think about MSSP and MDR in the same category, especially for an SMB where they're effectively doing a similar function. So when going back to your question on SMB cybersecurity and the needs for this, we are seeing an increasingly attractive market develop where these MDRs and MSSPs are becoming the easy button for the SMB. So you're a 50-person shop, 100-person shop. Maybe you have one IT person on staff. You have an ability to get the latest in cybersecurity technology and expertise via this outsource model by adopting an MDR and MSSP. And there's some amazing innovative companies that are making it very easy for SMBs to deploy cybersecurity throughout their organization. They're realizing the business and market benefits of that. In addition to that, the reason why this category has become attractive is the role of cyber insurance in all of it, right?
So you beat me to it. That was my next thing. I was going to ask you about the insurance component.
I mean, generally, we talked about last night how business risk and cybersecurity risk are now intertwined. And so when insurers begin to think about cyber insurance, they're beginning to think about the implications cybersecurity attacks on the business itself. They're thinking about the basic level of protections that these SMBs have to underwrite a cyber insurance policy. And oftentimes, they'll require either an MDR MSSP be in place to provide that basic level of protection against future attacks. They'll require certain processes in place that, the MDR MSSP will help these SMBs enforce and monitor. And then they'll also require certain technologies be deployed throughout an organization's like antivirus or, password managers or, MFA, multi-factor authentication that cyber insurers will want to make sure is in place to protect against future attacks as well. So there's certainly this driver of SMBs realizing the need to protect themselves, not necessarily having the expertise to do it, and then engaging in this interesting segment around MDR, MSSP, but also in order for them to get that cyber insurance, it's also causing them to want to increase their security posture by adopting the tooling that these MDRs and MSSPs provide.
So I got to imagine some of these insurance companies, I think there's several kind of niche insurance companies providing this, have some sort of checklist to measure a company's cyber hygiene. And got to imagine they have some good educational materials like, hey, here are 10 things that you need to be doing right now.
Right.
I think we talked about it last night, educating the employees and challenging them with fake malicious emails. And if they've got certain employees that continue to fall for them, maybe reposition them or at the very least adjust their security clearance.
That's right.
Internally.
Yeah.
And might cause your insurance premium to go up if you've got a bunch of people, continue to fall for these things. So I kind of highlighted the importance of education, obviously, to help mitigate these risks. Because you start out the whole talk about it's the people that are the problem.
Right.
That's the weak link in this deal. It seems to have a trickle down effect. So we wanted to talk also about kind of the M&A process.
Mm-hmm.
You know, many of our existing clients are founders that have had an exit. And a lot of the folks that we talk to that are in our pipeline or part of our community of founders that we keep stay in touch with are continuing to grow their company and are tracking towards some sort of event, whether it's a financial buyer or strategic. And so maybe you can talk about some do's and don'ts to mitigate risk on both sides approaching a potential transaction. And you have a ton of experience in this given your background.
Throughout my career, I've done dozens of M&A deals and even, you know, now at Night Dragon, dozens of investments. And so being on the buy side, investing in companies, acquiring companies, you're always looking to assess risk, right? Now, risk is naturally part of a transaction because there's asymmetric information between the buyer and seller. And as a buyer, you want to protect yourself against those risks to the extent possible. So one aspect of doing that is due diligence. And in M&A, you know, historically, we would do technology diligence, but 10 years ago, cybersecurity diligence was a little bit of an afterthought. It was always a nice to have.
Mm-hmm.
More recently, though, what we've seen is that because of the breaches that many acquirers have found in their targets post-close, cybersecurity diligence is now a critical part of confirmatory due diligence. And so many law firms, many technology firms out there have their own cybersecurity diligence offerings. Well, they'll assess the technologies that you're acquiring. They'll also assess the people and processes uh-huh. that you have in place, the policies that you have in place around cybersecurity, data privacy, et cetera. So it's become very critical in any M&A process and even investment process. At Night Dragon, whenever we're looking at investing in a company, because we are a cybersecurity and secure tech investor, we're sensitive to this. We do cybersecurity diligence as part of our process. We look to get an understanding of whether the organization has been breached or not in the past. We look to understand their processes to prevent breaches in the future, because it's an important part of running a business today, and it's a risk of running a business today as well. So mm-hmm. in terms of do's and don'ts, I think generally, just to do business, you're going to want to have a good understanding of where you are in your cybersecurity maturity and your cybersecurity posture. That's not only relevant for an M&A transaction, it's relevant to sell to other customers, especially if you're a startup beginning to sell to large enterprises
right.
like banks.
That makes sense. Gosh, it's a thread that runs through every area for having good cyber hygiene, making sure that the customers that you're selling to, the bigger customers, are comfortable with your cybersecurity processes, and the insurance company that's insuring you, making sure you're adhering to those processes. And if you're getting acquired, the buyer is going to want to do some due diligence in this space. So I'm going to have to add this to my little list of things that transition readiness for owners. So this is good stuff. Morgan, let's switch gears a little bit. We've been talking about cybersecurity. Let's switch gears to secure tech.
Yeah.
And first, if you don't mind just defining secure tech for the audience, and then maybe you can give us some case studies.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, at Night Dragon, we focus on a sector called secure tech or security tech. The way we think about the world and the market opportunity is that society today faces a tremendous amount of threats. Cybersecurity is a big component of that. There are many cyber threats out there. But we are also facing many physical safety threats. We also face many national security threats because of the geopolitical tensions that have been rising. And so we want to spend time investing in companies that are innovating around our ability to face those threats. And we want to face those threats using market-leading technologies, innovative technologies. And so when we think about areas where we spend time, while we do a lot in cyber, we also have been looking at the physical security and safety market. We've also been looking at the national security and defense tech market. And the common theme across these subsectors is there's this aspect of a threat, that's also driving us to innovate, driving spend within the category and creating new market leaders and disruption opportunities. And so when we think about the overall market of security tech, it's about $500 billion in size, but you have these tailwinds within each of these subsectors where the threat itself is getting worse and it's driving more spend to defend against these threats in the future. And it's creating some very compelling tailwinds behind companies that we're looking at and investing towards.
We're also talking about kind of critical infrastructure.
Yeah.
Assets like water treatment plants. We also talked a little bit about an example you gave last night was the security around the Four Seasons when we were there, the cameras.
There's a couple things to hit on there. So critical infrastructure is a vertical that historically has operated in this sector called operational technology, as opposed to information technology, right? So today we're sitting in your office, you have your computer that's connected to your IT network. That network helps you share information across your employees, but there's a whole nother network that operates water treatment plants, oil and gas, machinery, manufacturing plants, right? And that network is called the OT network. That historically has been a market where, because it's largely legacy type equipment, there's not much sophistication to the information and communication between the machinery, where there hasn't been much cybersecurity attention until recently. And the reason for that is because many OT environments within critical infrastructure companies have been the target of cyber attacks. I mean, we actually recently, there's been reports from the FBI around the Chinese targeting critical infrastructure within the U.S. You mentioned the Ukraine war. That is a key part of Russia's strategy in targeting cyber attacks against Ukrainian critical infrastructure, shutting down the power, shutting down the way society operates behind these critical infrastructure industries. And so that is a really interesting yet scary market. We haven't, you know, there's been historically examples of critical infrastructure attacks in Eastern Europe, you know, in the Middle East that have been directly impactful to their society, but we haven't seen that in the US yet. And I think we are all trying to get ready for the day where, you know, we potentially might see a cybersecurity attack against critical infrastructure that has a material impact on our daily lives, our the business that we do,
right,
and society. So that is a really interesting area where you have this convergence of cyber and physical, because, you know, if your water treatment plant gets shut down due to a cyber attack, then you can't drink the water that's coming out your faucet and you can't use the water that's getting used within your neighborhood. So that it becomes a critical issue. So that's one dynamic within security tech that's compelling for us, that we're spending a lot of time on. The other one you mentioned, the cameras, you know, it's interesting. Physical security as a market, it's about $120 billion in size worldwide. And it is one of the last remaining markets to even just move to the cloud. So much of physical security today is done through people. You know, you have physical security officers or private security officers that will monitor premises for you. And then it's also done through antiquated equipment where you put video cameras up and they're wired to some sort of on-prem server, on-prem DVR. And that is a result of generally, you know, within organizations, physical security is run by either your facilities personnel or your physical security officer. All of that is first moving to the cloud, and then second, becoming more of a critical part of your IT stack, meaning your IT professionals are now making the decisions on what sort of equipment to put within your organization, because they want to make sure the data from that equipment is getting to the right place so that data becomes actionable and that data can be correlated against other types of data to determine whether something malicious could be happening on premises or within your office building or within your retail location. One interesting dynamic we're seeing around physical security is this move to the cloud, but over time, we're also seeing the impact of Gen AI on physical security as well. Now that you have these physical security cameras taking in an immense amount of data, you can use that data for physical security use cases like identifying unusual behavior or preventing loss within a retail organization. But you can begin to apply more use cases with that data that could be compelling for organizations. One common example for retail is dwell time, like how long customers wait to get service from a waitress in the case of the Four Seasons. That becomes critical information for organizations focus on customer experience and customer satisfaction. And so you get that data in real time, put it into a business analytics report. You know, every day your head of customer experience can review this report. So it removes a lot of the manual nature of getting this rich data within retail experiences that, you know, over time, physical security can become more of a business optimization type of use case, which we see to be very powerful in this market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We also talked about kind of national security and safety technologies and some of the innovations that we're seeing. An example is actually a local company here that's doing some pretty cool stuff with some drone ships.
Yeah.
Patrolling certain areas of the world. Maybe you can share a little bit about the importance of that. And I can't remember if we already talked about this in our conversation today or if it was last night, but how much the government is relying on private enterprise.
Yeah, so one of the dynamics we're seeing around national security defense tech as part of our security tech thesis is that the DoD in particular is now investigating more and more commercial technologies to purchase when they think about defense, right? And we've seen this through great examples of companies like Palantir, you know, bringing autonomy to the battle space, and Anduril bringing autonomy to aerial drones. You mentioned the local company that we have the pleasure of working with, Saronic, that's bringing that same autonomy to the maritime sector. This is just one example of many where the pace of innovation within the commercial sector, the private sector, is just so much faster than what we can do in terms of the way we've done defense historically. So you have some amazing firms out here in Austin like AVC and Overmatch and others that have provided the required amount of capital, upfront capital, for these companies to successfully do what they do. And we think Anduril and Palantir are just great examples of the bigger market opportunity around defense tech, national security, that commercial companies can go after. And you could use innovative technologies we've seen that are typically used in Teslas and iPhones and applying those innovative technologies towards defense tech use cases. Given what we're seeing in the geopolitical environment, given the changing landscape of kinetic warfare we're seeing in Eastern Europe and the Middle East, this is critical for us to get right as a nation. And so we certainly see headed in the right direction. We think Saronic out here will be a big part of that. But as an investor, we would love to see more of that. And that's where we're spending a lot of time as well.
Yeah, it seems like a fascinating space for sure. All right. So I want you to get your crystal ball out.
Yeah.
And look over the next 5 years. And I know that things are moving so quickly with AI and the advancements that we're seeing there, and, you know, energy is a problem. I think
yeah,
because it takes a ton of it to generate all this. And so what would you say the biggest innovations and threats that we should be watching for over the next, say, 5 years?
5 years, yeah.
Maybe three. You want me to go three?
Yeah, maybe three. So look, I mean, the threats we're seeing, it just changes so rapidly, which is why it's always hard to predict 5 years out, even 3 years out for that matter. I think, as I mentioned earlier, we will see more Gen AI-based attacks. And so as these models become much more sophisticated, as they begin to operate in different modalities like video, you will see more attacks come in the form of deepfakes. You'll see more attacks come in the form of, you know, videos that are generated by AI that are used to spoof and impersonate individuals. We're already seeing that innovation on the sales side. There are amazing companies out there using Gen AI to create avatars, right? And to create effectively like AI personas that you can use for marketing purposes. You just got to give them the copy that you want them to read, and they'll create somebody, you know, promoting a product for you, right? And then you could also use your own video to go, instead of having to record hours and hours of your own copy, you can just upload it to some of these sites, and they'll go and use AI to go and create these videos for you on the fly, which is amazing technology. It's creating a lot of efficiency for marketing personas and sales personas. But you can think about the use of that technology in the wrong hands and the creation of AI avatars for impersonation type attacks, right? Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to see more and more of that. We're already seeing signs of it today. I think we will see innovations though, around it as well. Within security tech, whenever you have the threat, you'll have innovations come forward to defend against it. And so that's what we're paying attention to over the next couple of years is where are these big markets? How quickly will they develop? And then what is the threat landscape we're going to be facing? And what types of technologies will we need to defend against those latest threats?
Mm-hmm.
I think a little bit of the wild card out there is, you know, another buzzword we haven't used on this call yet, but quantum. They call it Q-Day. Q-Day is on the horizon where quantum computers will begin to have the ability to break encryption. We are seeing some of that. Actually, last week we read about a research team out of China that used D-Wave quantum computer to break RSA encryption.
Gosh.
And so you see this dynamic where if you marry quantum with some of the abilities that we have in AI, you could see the attack landscape worsen, but you could also see another innovation boom occur over time as well. So I think you'll begin to see more and more of that. Quantum computers themselves are very difficult to go mainstream just because of the cost it takes to operate something like that. But I do think that quantum computers will be leveraged in some of the state-sponsored attacks that we've seen, where attackers do have the resources to operate something like that in their attacks and use it to their advantage. So generally, without being too negative on the industry, whenever we do see threats out there, we will see innovations. And that's what I'm excited to see out there. One dynamic we see in our market is even though it's a huge market, it's also one that's highly fragmented. And it's fragmented because no one company is able to stop everything, right? And so there will be small companies, maybe out here in Austin, that will innovate, that will find new ways to defend against the latest threats. And we're excited to be able to meet them, get to know them, and work with them in creating big companies.
So we're towards the end of our time here, Morgan. And are there any nuggets of advice that you would give to an individual and their families? And then also the small, medium business owners, middle market businesses.
In terms of cybersecurity?
Yeah, just words of advice, things to think about.
So individuals and families, I would say, I think just one general cybersecurity hygiene for everyone, never reuse passwords. So you always want to have a specific password for every site. The reason why is because you probably get letters in the mail where it indicates your username or your password has been compromised from AT&T or Verizon.
Yes, and those I've gotten eight of those letters in the last 2 months.
So what happens there is that cyber attackers find this information on the dark web, and they will take that username, they'll take that password and try it on multiple sites, right? And so the reason why you don't want to reuse it is that could lead to them compromising your credentials and your login information for other services that you leverage. And so, you know, oftentimes when I speak to my friends and family, I do promote the use of a password manager out there to make sure that every individual service that you use has a customized password. Over time, you can also adopt things like pass keys and biometric authentication. So your iPhone has ability for you to log in via facial recognition. Leveraging that more and more is certainly a good thing. But I think that's where I've seen my family and, you know, my parents, they use the same exact password on multiple sites, and it's just creating a huge risk. And but, you know, managing different passwords, it's a pain. It's very difficult to manage. So there's certainly a trade-off there, but that is where we certainly see attackers targeting because of how easy it is when individuals use passwords across multiple sites. So that's maybe one piece of advice for individuals.
Do you think
and families
having a code word or a code gesture with all of the deepfakes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, over time, maybe that needs to happen, right?
I had a conversation with my family. They thought I was absolutely nuts.
Yeah.
I was like, no, I'm serious. There's some crazy stuff coming out. Like, I think we need a code word and I think we need a code gesture. Just like, if I see a video of you, I want to make sure it's you.
Yeah. Well, even attacks today are coming via voice, where your voice can be impersonated and ask somebody to send money to a certain account.
Sure.
And so how do you make sure that individual on the other end is really that individual? That is certainly a problem we're seeing out in the market today.
Yeah.
So for SMBs, I think we kind of hit on it.
Yeah.
And the key theme over this podcast is really just need to think about your cyber hygiene,
right?
To do business, but also think about how these cyber attacks can be significantly disruptive to your business. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the examples that you brought up earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So that is one thing I think is important. business, cyber risk is business risk. And so you have to think about cybersecurity early on. You have to make sure you have the training, the process, the awareness within your organization. And then you need to take steps, whether it's via the MDR, MSSP, via deploying technologies within your organization to make sure that you have that appropriate cyber hygiene so that if and when you do face a cyber attack, you can mitigate the impact of that as much as possible.
All right, Maureen, last question, and then we're going to wrap it up.
Yeah.
Night Dragon's for sure the coolest name on our platform. Can you tell us again how you guys came up with Night Dragon?
Yeah, no, it certainly gets a lot of attention out there, and it's a unique name for a venture capital fund. Uh-huh. So Night Dragon is actually named after a pretty famous cyber attack that occurred in 2010. 2010 was a watershed moment for the cybersecurity industry because Dave, the founder and CEO of Night Dragon, who was the CEO of McAfee at the time, found the first signals of state-sponsored attacks in the wild, meaning examples of where cyber armies of countries were targeting private commercial organizations in the U.S. The first one that was found was called Aurora, and Aurora was an example of a Chinese state-sponsored army targeting Google. And then the second one that was found by the McAfee researchers was Night Dragon, where Chinese cyber armies were targeting U.S.-based oil companies to understand their pipeline for drilling opportunities. And so when we decided to create Night Dragon and Dave decided to formalize the investing effort here, because Night Dragon was such a watershed moment for the industry, which was a little bit of an awakening of how serious that cybersecurity threat was, We decided to name the firm Night Dragon. So That's the backstory there.
That's cool. Well, good, Maureen. We'll, on behalf of our entire team, ATX Wealth Partners, thank you so much. We really do appreciate you spending time out here in Austin with us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, wonderful dinner last night, and enjoyed doing this podcast with you here. And I'm excited to get this out to everybody.
Yeah.
And so for all the listeners out there, if you are not part of our community of founders and key stakeholders of privately held companies, you should be. We do great podcasts like this. We have in-person events like our roundtable discussions, which are awesome. And then we also have a ton of intellectual capital and white papers that we push out to our community. So if you'd like to be a part of that, just shoot us a note. We'd love to pull you into the group. So anyway, with that, have a great day, Morgan. And to all the listeners out there, thank you so much for listening. Have a good one.
This podcast is presented for informational purposes only and should not be relied upon as investment advice or the basis for making any investment decisions. It does not constitute an offer to sell or a solicitation of an offer to buy any specific product or service. UBS does not provide legal or tax advice, and we would recommend listeners to obtain appropriate independent professional advice. Some of the views and opinions expressed may not be those of UBS Group AG or its affiliates. UBS Financial Services Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC registered broker dealer. These services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreements and disclosures that we provide about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary. UBS Financial Services Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS Group AG and is a member of FINRA and SIPC.